Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 1, Text 4. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. 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 Naimishe nimisha shetre vishaya shonakadaya satam swagaya lokaya sahasram samanasata. Once in a holy place in the forest of Naimisharanya, great sages headed by the sage Shonaka assembled to perform a great thousand-year sacrifice for the satisfaction of the Lord and his devotees. Purport, the prelude of the Srimad Bhagavatam was spoken in the previous three shlokas. Now the main topic of this great literature is being presented. Srimad Bhagavatam, after its first recitation by Srila Shukadeva Goswami, was repeated for the second time at Naimisharanya. In the Vayavya Tantra, it is said that Brahma, the engineer of this particular universe, contemplated a great wheel which can enclose the universe. The hub of this great circle was fixed at a particular place known as Naimisharanya. Similarly, there is another reference to the forest of Naimisharanya in the Varaha Purana, where it is stated that by performance of sacrifice at this place, the strength of demoniac people is curtailed. Thus, Brahmanas prefer Naimisharanya for such sacrificial performances. The devotees of Lord Vishnu offer all kinds of sacrifice for his pleasure. The devotees are always attached to the service of the Lord, whereas fallen souls are attached to the pleasure of material existence. In Bhagavad Gita, it is said that anything performed in the material world for any reason other than for the pleasure of Lord Vishnu causes further bondage for this performer. It is enjoined, therefore, that all acts must be performed sacrificially for the satisfaction of Vishnu and his devotees. This will bring everyone peace and prosperity. The great sages are always anxious to do good to the people in general, and as such, the sages headed by Shonaka and others assembled at this holy place of Naimisharanya with a program of performing a great and continuous chain of sacrificial ceremonies. Forgetful men do not know the right path to peace and prosperity. However, the sages know it well, and therefore, for the good of all men, they are always anxious to perform acts which may bring about peace in the world. They are sincere friends to all living entities. At the risk of great personal inconvenience, they are always engaged in the service of the Lord for the good of all people. Lord Vishnu is just like a great tree, and all others, including the demigods, men, siddhas, charanas, vidyadharas, and other living entities are like branches, twigs, and leaves of the tree. By pouring water on the root of the tree, all the parts of the tree are automatically nourished. Only those branches and leaves which are detached cannot be so satisfied. Detached branches and leaves dry up gradually despite all watering attempts. Similarly, human society, when it is detached from the personality of Godhead, like detached branches and leaves, is not capable of being watered, and one attempting to do so is simply wasting his energy and resources. The modern materialistic society is detached from its relation to the Supreme Lord, and all its plans which are being made by atheistic leaders are sure to be baffled at every step. Yet they do not wake up to this. In this age, the congregational chanting of the holy names of the Lord is the prescribed method for waking up. The ways and means are most scientifically presented by Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and intelligent persons may take advantage of his teachings in order to bring about real peace and prosperity. Srimad Bhagavatam is also presented for the same purpose, and this will be explained more specifically later in the text.
Om Jnanati Mirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. Pancha Kalpa Taruvyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhayevacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namah. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasade Gaur Bhaktavinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
So we're doing this study of the Bhagavatam, you know, covering sections at a time. So we began with the prelude. This is the fourth verse. The first three verses were the prelude spoken by Srila Vyasadeva. In other words, his own introduction to the Srimad Bhagavatam, which describes the subject or the goal of the Srimad Bhagavatam and the glories of the Srimad Bhagavatam. I can briefly just go over those verses because I've gone over them extensively. In other words, one lecture on each verse. But the first verse discusses the subject of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Directly stating that Krishna is the all-in-all Param Satyam, Supreme Truth, Absolute Truth. From Him everything is coming. He's directly named. Bhagavate Vasudeva, the son of Vasudev, is God. And this is why these are his characteristics. Jadmadyasyayata. From him everything else is coming. Abhigyasarat. He's fully independent. He's conscious of everything, directly and indirectly. The illusory energy, Muyantiya Suriho. Even the great sages and demigods are bewildered by him. We discussed before, Mayavadi philosophy means that Brahman, or the spiritual substance covered by Maya, becomes the supreme lord and the living entities. So here directly it says that the illusory energy is not acting on him, it's his energy. And by his will it acts on others. Anyway, this was the conclusion. The subject is Krishna, he's God. And this is why he's God. This is who is God, and this is why he's God. And assimilating that knowledge comes to the natural conclusion, Param Satyam Dhimahi. If this is God, we should meditate on him, because our existence is relative to his. And the purpose of the part is to serve the whole. And service is to Krishna is awakened by meditating on his all attractive features, which inspire us to want to be his part and parcel servant. That was the first verse briefly. That discussed Krishna. The second verse discussed the Srimad Bhagavatam. That was the goal of the Srimad Bhagavatam. The second verse described the glories of the Srimad Bhagavatam. That it is the highest standard of scripture, because it only discusses dharma. It only discusses the pure state of the living entity. Prabhupada said the perfected state of the living entity is a devotee. There's nothing in the Bhagavatam except service to Krishna. And anything else but service to Krishna, even if some way it's meant, like karma kanda, to indirectly bring one to that platform. Sometimes things which are not directly in religious consciousness are put in religion to attract people to religion. But ultimately, if you're worshiping the demigods for some material gain, it's religious in the sense that you have to perform sacrifice to get that material gain. It'll purify you. But it's mixed with material consciousness. The Bhagavatam is pure, unique scripture, high standard. Dharma, projita kaitavo. Anything that's mixed with fruit of intention is kicked out of the Bhagavatam. It describes this in And it profounds the highest truth, which is reality distinguished from illusion for the welfare of all. So many points are made. Srimad Bhagavate Mahamuni Krite. It was written in the maturity of the author of the Vedas and the maturity of his realization. And that by hearing this submissively with the proper culture, hearing it in the proper way, carefully from the beginning, in the proper attitude, in the proper mood, then at once Krishna can become compact within the heart. See, he's explaining how it's a superior scripture and encouraging us to read it. At once Krishna will become compact in our heart. That's prema. Prema is when Krishna is compact in our heart. There's nothing else in our heart but Krishna. So this was also described because sometimes different people listening to different lectures, so I have to tie it together. So this was the standard of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Kim vai para ishvara. So what is the need of any other book if this is the standard? And then, as Prabhupada discussed the last verse that we described, it described that it's not only superior literature, but it's the topmost literature. Because it describes the ripened fruit of the Vedic literatures, which is intensified and perfect affection for Krishna, which is called love of Godhead. It's not only free from any other motive, but it discusses the prayojana, the goal, which is love of Godhead. Nigama kalpaturo galitam palam sukamukat amrita dravya sandhita. Not only is the ripened fruit of the Vedic literatures, but just like a fruit, when it gets, even if it's ripened, that's the best thing you can get from the tree. So the best thing you can get from the Vedas is this rasa, this intensified affection for Krishna, which is described in the 10th canto. That's the culmination of the Vedas. That's the fruit. The fruit is the best thing you can get from the tree. Sukamukat amrita. But when that ripened fruit is bit by a parrot, it becomes even more sweet. So sukamukha, when it comes from the mouth of Sukadeva Goswami, it's even better. He describes like this, sukamukha amrita dravya samyatam. And even though it's so high, it's also the easiest to eat. Just like the ripened fruit is the best, but it's also the easiest to digest. So Sukadeva Goswami made it digestible. Vivata bhagavatam rasam. Therefore, do drink this, O expert and thoughtful men, people who are connoisseurs, intelligent, they will take this. So that was the prelude of the glories of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And after that, now Vyasadeva is explaining when it was spoken for the second time. First it was spoken by, of course, Vyas learned it from his, Sukadeva learned it from his father. When it was really publicly spoken, it was spoken by Shukadeva Goswami, to Maharaj Prickin. Suta Goswami was there. And then he recited it again at Naimisharanya. So Vyasadeva is going to be telling this story, how it was recited at Naimisharanya for the second time. And therefore Vyasadeva begins to tell the story. Once in a holy place in the forest of Naimisharanya, great sages headed by the sage Shonaka assembled to perform a great thousand-year sacrifice for the satisfaction of the Lord and his devotees. So what we're also going to see in these verses is not only the story, but there's like a message that's being told also. The story presents a message. So even though the stories may not be connected, for example, this is Vyasa, in the first three verses talking directly about the Bhagavatam, and now he's going to tell a story about Suta Goswami speaking the Bhagavatam. There's a continuity of messages, because the first verse show how glorious the Bhagavatam is. Now the next question would be is how to access that knowledge, how to understand the Bhagavatam. It's so glorious. So therefore, this story is going to be there of how the Bhagavatam is going to be spoken at Naimisharanya. And what you'll see is, because the process is that you have to approach a teacher. This is how the knowledge of the Bhagavatam, the knowledge of Krishna, is revealed. Krishna is so much is inconceivably greater than us. He's only revealed by his own mercy. So the process is just through the teacher. So we'll see in this interchange coming up, we'll see them glorifying their teacher, and we'll see the qualifications of the teacher. And we'll also see the qualifications of the student, which are both relevant for us if we want to bibita Bhagavatam rasam, if we want to relish and drink the nectar of the Bhagavatam. The qualifications of the teacher and the qualifications of the student, both must be there. Just as Prabhupada always gave the example, if the man is potent, the woman is fertile, a child is born. One or the other, or both are lacking, nothing is born. So student must be qualified and teacher must be qualified. And then the Bhagavatam is born, which is Krishna is born within your heart. So Prabhupada describes this, that it's once in a holy place in the forest of Naimisharanya. So places are important. The significance of the place is here. Also in the Bhagavad Gita, the first thing that's described is the significance of the holy place. Places have an effect on consciousness. The internal is affected by the external. And places have particular potencies or flavor. Even material places. Forest has one effect on consciousness. The city has another effect on consciousness. And in terms of holy places, they also have particular effects on consciousness, and they have effects on everything when activities are performed there. So Naimisharanya, it's described in the purport as the universe is a big wheel. The hub of that wheel is Naimisharanya. And performing sacrifice there curtails demoniac influences, which is specifically why at the beginning of Kali Yuga, the sages of Naimisharanya, the sages picked Naimisharanya to perform their sacrifice. Because their specific purpose is to perform sacrifice for the good of people to counteract the influence of Kali Yuga. They can see their Trikala Gya. They can see past, present, and future. They can see the future. Even we can see the future because we know how seasons change, so we can see what the season will be. We know what the weather is be. When we see if someone is committing offenses, then we can know the reactions he'll get. There's a relationship between the present and the future. So the sages of Naimisharanya can actually see the future, and they can see the influence. And because they can see the influence, and this is the first thing that comes out in describing the sages of Naimisharanya, is the nature of a sage is that he wants to do good for others. Because sage means that he wants to follow God's will. God's will in this world is to purify the souls that are here. So a sage that's in the world, well, generally, of course, there's Bhajananandi and Ghostananandi. They're both concerned. It's just that a Ghostananandi is more inclined towards preaching. So they're concerned for the welfare of the people. And in Borijan, I've been listening to his tapes also. He made one point that is very nice. He said, sacrifice is the mark of a sage and makes one a sage. So right from the beginning, you see the heart of a saintly person. The first time we're in the Bhagavatam, we're seeing an assembly of saintly persons. We're seeing their concern for others. So this is the nature of a sage. And because they're concerned for others, therefore they want to perform sacrifice, because sacrifice is what makes things auspicious, both materially and spiritually. They just want to understand exactly what sacrifice to perform, and that's going to come out in their questions. When they ask the acharya, Sutta Goswami what to do. Because the main sacrifice is your prescribed duties, what the activity you should perform. So that has to be determined according to one's condition. And the duties that one performs, or the yogi one performs at a particular time, has to also be ascertained from the conditions of that time. Just as a doctor prescribes medicine according to the condition of the patient. So we see they're performing sacrifice to bring prosperity. So this is the beginning of the story. Text 5. Tarekadata munayo pratahutahutagnaya satkritam sutamasinam prapachur idam adarat. One day, after finishing their morning duties by burning a sacrificial fire and offering a seat of esteem to Srila Shuta Goswami, the great sages made inquiries with great respect about the following matters. First sentence, Prabhupada says in the purport, morning is the best time to hold spiritual services. So we see first the place was picked, then the time of day. Also the people are important. These are the most important external influences on consciousness. The food also is very important. So the persons were mentioned. Previous verse, Shonakadaya, he's the headed by the sage, Shonaka. Later on, he'll be described as the most eldest and learned Vedantist. And this is the system, because all sacrifice and all activity to do good, you must have direction on what to do. And as I just described before, that direction is very, you have to do it very careful. The acharya, he has to select the proper activities. So they're seeing this influence. It's just like a doctor who sees an epidemic. And he sees the condition of the people, and then he has to think very carefully what medicine to give. So they want direction on what to do. And therefore they offer a seat of esteem to Sutta Goswami, and they make inquiries with great respect. So we see the dynamic between the student and the teacher. With great respect. Respect goes upward and affection goes downward. And therefore, if one wants knowledge, he has to have a very respectful attitude. And that's why in a Vedic society, when a saintly person comes, there's a ceremony to greet him. There's respect, and it manifests in different cultural greetings. And that creates the atmosphere of, because saintly, it means a person. People reciprocate in relationships. So saintly means the person is senior. So when a senior person comes, it's expected that he has some knowledge and wisdom. And therefore, if he's approached respectfully, then naturally he will respond affectionately. This is a person. It's natural reciprocation. And what is that affection of the senior person in a Vedic society? Someone who's senior has knowledge and wisdom. And therefore he bestows it upon one. So this is the just like in the Bhagavatam, in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, it describes that there are five characteristics, five most potent items of devotional service, and one is sadhu sangha. So it says that you should associate with advanced devotees who are like-minded and affectionate to you. So that affection has to be cultivated. But very important. Someone may be senior, but not like maybe advanced, but not like-minded. He may be advanced and not like and like-minded, but not be affectionate towards you. It doesn't mean he's a cruel person, but the relationship is not there. So that relationship has to be cultivated for transcendental knowledge to come. And therefore, there's a way of approaching a teacher, the way of exchanging love, the way of giving respect. So we see the culture manifest, and they give him the Vyasasan, and Prabhupada in the purport discusses this. Now, the elevated seat is called Vyasasan, and Vyasa is the original preceptor for all men. All other preceptors are considered to be his representatives. A representative is one who can exactly present the viewpoint of Sri Vyasadeva. So he's the original preceptor. Why? Because he was the empowered entity responsible or empowered for the service of communicating and disseminating Vedic knowledge. And in the story of how the Bhagavatam was written, which will come later on, after being instructed by his spiritual master, he went into trance. And in the maturity of realization, in trance or samadhi, he saw the absolute truth. He saw the absolute truth. Directly. He saw Krishna, and he saw Krishna's energies, and he saw the exchange between Krishna's energy and the relationship between them. And based on what he saw, he wrote the Srimad Bhagavatam. So the Bhagavatam gives the realized view of Vyasadeva as he's seen the truth. And therefore, a teacher is one who takes the viewpoint of Vyas. And unless he takes the viewpoint of Vyas, he can't see the truth. So how can he communicate the truth? Just like to see something, you may have to have proper perspective. You're in the forest and there's a beautiful bird. And someone says, oh, look, do you see the beautiful bird? And then you say, no. He said, well, stand over here. Then you see it. And that's how you become realized. You see through the eyes of the Shastra. You see through the eyes of the saintly person. You see in their perspective. Even if you can't see yourself, by looking in that way, you'll realize it eventually. So one who takes the elevated seat or the Vyasasan, he has to represent Vyas, who's the original preceptor. And therefore, Prabhupada says in the purport, the Goswamis do not deliver lectures on the Bhagavatam capriciously. Rather, they execute their services most carefully, following their predecessors who delivered the spiritual message unbroken to them. They followed Vyas. And therefore, the direction here is those who listen to the Bhagavatam may put questions to the speaker in order to elicit the clear meaning, but this should not be done in a challenging spirit. Because he's taking that position of representing Vyasa's viewpoint. Okay, next. Vishya uchu tvaya kalu paranani saitihasani chanaga atyatthanyapyaditani Dharma Shastani Yanyita. The sages said, respected Sutta Goswami, you are completely free from all vice. You are well versed in all the scriptures famous for religious life, and in the Puranas and the history as well. For you have gone through them under proper guidance and also have also explained them. So here gives the qualifications for the speaker. Completely free from all vice. So if you want to accept someone as a teacher, then the philosophy has to be exemplified in his life. Because unless one is exemplifying the philosophy in his life, then he cannot see the truth. He cannot. Realizing the truth means not only understanding it, but seeing it. To see it, you have to live it. And we'll see later on that when Sutta Goswami says, I'm going to speak the Bhagavatam, they're so excited to hear from him because he said, I've heard it and I realized it. So realizing the truth means you have to think about the philosophy and then you have to see it. And the way you have to see it is you have to live by it. So therefore, a bona fide teacher has to be free from vice. And what to speak of the basic platform of spiritual life, you're not the body. If you do not control your senses, you can't be free from the bodily concept of life. Right? If you can't control your... And that was Vyasadeva's vision. Vyasadeva's vision is that the living entity was suffering because he was thinking himself a product of matter. But why is the living entity thinking himself a product of matter? That's the illusion. Why? Because he wants to enjoy and be the controller. So that's the cause of illusion in the material world. So if someone is not free from vice, someone's performing sinful activity, it means that he's identifying with the body. He's an illusion. He's not seeing the truth. He's identifying with the illusion of the material world, and I am the controller, and I am the enjoyer. And he know, and the second, these are the qualifications, and he knows Shastra. We have faith in Guru. Why do we have faith in Guru? Because the Guru knows the truth. And how does he know the truth? Because he knows the Shastra, and that's where the truth is expressed. Therefore, when we have faith in teacher, why do we do what he says? What is our faith in Prabhupada based on? Our faith in Prabhupada is based on is that he knows the Shastra. And that what he says is the absolute perspective. It's the truth. The pramana. In other words, our pramana, or our means of knowing, is Shabda Brahman. Is the transcendental perspective of God. That is our means of knowing by accepting that. We accept Guru because he's fixed in that Shabda Brahman. He knows the Shastra. He knows the scripture. And therefore we're eager to take his vision and guidance. And then finally here, it's a very interesting point, and Prabhupada stresses this. He's not only gone through the Shastra, but he's also explained them. And Prabhupada says to hear and explain them is more important than reading them. One can assimilate the knowledge of the revealed scriptures only by hearing and explaining. Hearing is called Shravana and explaining is called Kirtana. The two processes, Shravana and Kirtana, are of primary importance to progressive spiritual life. Only one who has properly grasped the transcendental knowledge from the right source by submissive hearing can properly explain the subject. So explaining it is more important than reading it. It's an interesting thing when you have to explain a subject. It automatically forces you to realize it. Because when you're teaching or explaining, what do you have to do? You have to take the subject and the meaning and you have to communicate it, which means that you may have to change the words. To change the words and keep the initial meaning intact means that you have to have a thorough grasp and understanding of the particular point that you're explaining. As soon as you have to explain something, it tests your realization. I know myself, my process, different people have processes studying, my process is to speak. As soon as when I speak, I see whether I realize the subject matter or not. Because when you have to communicate it, when you have to make what you're speaking about understood, and therefore you have to keep on changing the words in different ways, It's soon a test whether you have that original concept understood deeply or not. I think it was Tamal Krishnamurti that once told me that Prabhupada said, he once told Prabhupada he didn't have enough time to study. And Prabhupada said, well, you give class 15 minutes of giving class is like an hour of studying. That doesn't mean just giving class. It means talking and preaching to people. It accelerates our philosophical realization. So he had all these qualities. Free from vice, well-versed in all the Dharma Shastras, Puranas, the histories, went through them, and he had explained them.
Yani Veda Vidam Shreshto Bhagavan Badarayana Anye Chamunaya Sutta Parabara Vido Vidu.
Being the eldest learned Vedantist, O Sutta Goswami, you're acquainted with the knowledge of Vyasadeva, who is the incarnation of Godhead, and you also know other sages who are fully versed in all kinds of philosophical and metaphysical knowledge. So this is also his qualification. He's well acquainted. Very nice. He's called Veda Vidam Shreshto. He's the senior most scholar in Bhagavan Bhadarayana. Bhadarayana is Vyasadeva. He's fully conversant with Vyasadevas. And Prabhupada discusses, because why? The Bhagavatam is the commentary on the Vedanta Sutra by the author. And the Vedanta Sutra is the commentary on the Vedas. So he's fully conversant with Vyasadeva's writing. And besides that, Prabhupada mentions here the six different philosophical systems, Sadarshan, Gotama, Kanada, Kapila, Pantanjali, Jaimini, and Ashtavakra. Says theism is completely explained in Vedanta Sutra, whereas in other systems, no mention is given to the ultimate cause of all causes. These the other systems, they don't actually present God. So one can sit on the Vyasasan only after being conversant in all systems of philosophy, so that one can fully present the theistic views of the Bhagavatam in defiance of all systems. Today, the opposition or to the Vedanta comes in the form of other types of New Age atheistic philosophies. But ultimately, all philosophical systems originate in these six types of systems. And we have to be, conversant in other systems of thought that come to us so that we can clear the doubts of others in their pursuit of Krishna consciousness and defend the viewpoint of Vyas. So this was another qualification.
Vetatvam somyatat sarvam tatpatastaranugrahat pruyusnigdasya shishyasya Guravo Guyam Apyuta.
And because you are submissive, your spiritual masters have endowed you with all favors bestowed upon a gentle disciple. Therefore, you can tell us all that you have scientifically learned from them. So, this is perhaps the most important qualification. The most important qualification for the teacher is that he was a proper student. The most important qualification for the guru is that he was a proper disciple. One only becomes a guru one never thinks he's a guru. He only thinks that he's teaching others as a service to his spiritual master. So, therefore, they wanted to hear from him. They wanted to hear from him because they knew that he himself was a proper disciple and therefore was bestowed with the mercy and favors of his teacher. And therefore, they wanted to hear from him. I also had this experience when I was in Vrindavan, and we'd have a different Bhagavatam speaker speaking every day. I wasn't just interested in hearing scholars, you know, what few there were. But when I would see that a devotee was undertaking some vrata, or was very sincere in his service, I would want to hear from him because I knew he had some realizations and mercy from Prabhupada. And therefore, I wanted to hear from him. So they're most enthusiastic because they realize that he has the favors of his spiritual master. And you can think of Prabhupada's prime qualification. Of course, he was free from vice. He knew Shastra. He had thoroughly explained them. He defended the viewpoint of Vyas of all systems. But his most important qualification was that he was 100% surrendered to his spiritual master. I heard one devotee once tell a story when he was in Prabhupada's room in Calcutta. And when he was in Prabhupada's room in Calcutta, Prabhupada was thinking out loud, being in India, how was I the fortunate one among all my godbrothers? How was I the fortunate one among all my godbrothers? He was thinking like that. Because Prabhupada's godbrothers, they were the godbrothers that were greater scholars than him. In terms of knowing books, knowing verses, knowing the different references, they were incredible scholars. OBL Kapoor, when I met OBL Kapoor, he told me at the time of Bhakti Siddhanta, he said, even Sridhar Maharaj, Prabhupada's godbrother Sridhar Maharaj, who has wonderful philosophical realizations and is so learned, he says he wasn't the top scholar. He was talking about people like Sundarananda Vidyavinod and Professor Sanyal and Ananta Vasudev. You can't imagine how learned these people were. Prabhupada was thinking, how was I the most fortunate one? And then Prabhupada said, because I was 100% faithful to the order of my spiritual master. And one who is 100% faithful, in other words, he's faithful. Faithful also means submissive, surrendered. He has faith in his guru that his guru is representing Vyas. And he's sincere in that he wants to become Krishna's servant. And therefore wants to do, has faith in what his spiritual master orders, and he also has great desire to do it. He's not hindered by his own attachments. So such a person can assimilate the absolute truth. And his guru will naturally give him the absolute truth. There's an English expression of, you shouldn't throw pearls to a swine because the swine can't utilize the pearls. It has no value because of his nature. So similarly, what is that absolute truth that one will be getting? It's that Krishna is God and we're his servant. So unless you have that mood of service, then what value does this absolute truth have to you, which will teach you that you are a servant and that Krishna is the master and will teach you how to serve. When one is independent, why is he independent? He's independent because he wants to be the controller. He wants to be the enjoyer. So when one has that mentality mixed in, how much knowledge can his teacher give him? Because how much knowledge does he want? And even if he wants, how much can he assimilate at one time? And therefore, the teacher cannot give him. So he should always have the image of the Guru standing above us with his hands filled with jewels of transcendental knowledge, in great mercy and great desire to pour them down upon us, just waiting for us. That I am Krishna's servant, and this is how to serve him, and this is how to serve him, and this is the attachment that you have to give up in your heart, and this thing that you like really doesn't have value. This is all part of the absolute truth. And this is what you have to do. And when he sees that open heart, whatever you want, I will do. And he sees that sincerity of the disciple to actually want to serve. Then we can see, we have the image of the Guru giving him more and giving him more. And this is how you serve, and this is what you should give up. But if a person is independent, why is a person rebellious? Because he doesn't want any knowledge or instructions that will restrict his comforts and worldviews to satisfy his desire to be the enjoyer and the controller. Is that clear? And therefore, he's resistant. And therefore, there's a limit to what the Guru can give him. And there's also a limit to how much he can actually understand. Especially in terms of higher subject matters, if he's still attached to the material world. How much of that can he actually assimilate if he has such material conception? So when one's submissive, but submissive doesn't mean like a robot. It means that you have an image in your mind of what is a good devotee. He's one with a service attitude. A good devotee, his object in life is the pleasure of Krishna. Because that's his object, naturally he wants to know from his teacher what is the pleasure of Krishna. And he's happy with service because that's already he's mature, and that's his conception in life, devotional service. So this is there. And also, naturally, by that attitude, there's reciprocation from the teacher also. Because what is our philosophy of getting knowledge? Tesham satati yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam tadami buddhi yogam tvam yenamam upayanti te. For one who's always engaged in Krishna's service with love, that I want to please you, didami, Krishna gives. Okay, you want to please me. Here's the knowledge how to please me. So one who's submissive is expressing his consciousness, his qualification, that I want to serve Krishna. I want to satisfy Krishna. And therefore, I want to satisfy the teacher. And you satisfy someone by fulfilling his desire. So what you want, I will do. And this is your mission. I take that mission. And such a person is, the Guru reciprocates. He gives he gives the disciple mercy. Therefore, Prabhupada's purport says, the secret of success in spiritual life is satisfying the spiritual master and thereby getting his sincere blessings. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has sung in his famous 8 stanzas on the spiritual master, quote, I offer my respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of my spiritual master. Only by his satisfaction can one please the personality of Godhead. And when he is dissatisfied, there is only havoc on the path of self-realization. End quote. It is essential, therefore, that the disciple be very much obedient and submissive to the bona fide spiritual master. Sutta Goswami fulfilled all these qualifications as a disciple, and therefore he was endowed with all favors by his learned and self-rised spiritual master, such as Vyasadeva and others. The sages of Naimisharanya were confident that Srila Sutta Goswami was bona fide. They were anxious to hear from him. They were anxious to hear from Prabhupada because he was completely surrendered to Krishna and Krishna's will through his spiritual master. And therefore we know he was bestowed with all favors. So these are the qualifications. Are there any questions?
Well, when you describe the qualification of disciples that he must fulfill the law to please. And immediately I see my own shortcomings in that area. And I don't want to be so discouraged that so it's like a proportionate thing, or that the desire may be there, our ability may fall short, but we keep the desire to be kind.
Well, we don't start out at the pure platform. Our bhakti is mixed. Pure means all that's in our consciousness is the satisfaction of Krishna. It's mixed initially. It's mixed with our own personal desires and attachments. And by our sincere effort, Krishna will see the sincere effort and he reciprocates. Later on in the Bhagavatam, we're going to hear the verse Srinvata Swakata Krishna Punya Shravana Kirtana Hidyanta Stoya Bhajani Vidanoti Suritsatam. That Krishna is Suritsatam. He's the benefactor of the truthful devotee. So if one is sincere and he wants to advance and serve Krishna, even if there's material desires in the heart, he'll take up the process to please Krishna, which is service and executing sadhana bhakti. And that's the expression of our sincerity. And Krishna reciprocates with us by purifying our heart and giving us spiritual strength. But this is the qualification of the acharya. This is the qualification of the teacher. He's the pure devotee. He's the perfect disciple. So, of course, his standard is the ideal. And therefore, even if we're not pure, it helps to know the standard, so that we don't become complacent at a lower level of Krishna consciousness, but that we assess the platform which you're at presently, see what the goal is, and make the appropriate steps to achieve that goal. By seeing what activities we have to add to our spiritual life to nourish our devotional service, and by analyzing appropriately, you know, what activities or anarthas we can practically give up now that our realization is sufficient to overcome. So we shouldn't become discouraged. Okay, any other questions?
And how you see, we don't even have to read. Having faith in the Guru is sufficient, and he can give you everything. So, I was thinking about it in so many different ways, and one thing was, How important is it that Guru is alive on the planet? That's one question.
Yeah. If you have that faith, but there's also a connection between faith and knowledge. Why do we have faith? In other words, Prabhupada also said that surrender means to follow all the details also. So there's a connection between faith and knowledge also. For example, sometimes we commit offenses. Right? It means that our faith is not so strong in the instruction. In other words, you have to also, it's not so strong, our faith, in the principle, in that principle of Krishna consciousness, because our knowledge is not sufficient. But if we know the story of Durvasa Muni story of Gopala Chakravarti. We know the story of Daksha Yagna. You know, if we know the principle, you know, thoroughly, we'll be less, you know, we'll have more faith to actually follow it. Or, I always give the example, there was one devotee in Vrindavan, Vibhu Chaitanya. You know, he didn't even chant, I think, regular rounds. He just kind of chanted because he cooked all day long. I think Prabhupada just told him, just cook all the offerings and he would chant all day long. He would chant in the summer. He would chant in the evening. He would serve in the, you know, in 120 degree heat. He would serve in the winter. So yes, you know, he wasn't studying. He wasn't reading. But where did he get that faith? It must have come from a previous life. Because if I was put in the kitchen in the middle of the summer alone, and I saw that everyone else was doing nothing, then my mind would start to question, why am I the only one that's doing the service? And, you know, what facility should I have? And why is this person not working? Why do I have to do this service? How many people would leave? How many people would just be able to stick to the order of the spiritual master without sufficient knowledge? And also, why do we have books? Why has Prabhupada presented so many books? Because that will nourish our faith. It will nourish our bhakti. So if you have that faith, like the gopis, then it's sufficient. The gopis didn't, Prabhupada said the gopis didn't love, they didn't know Krishna, they just loved Krishna. But how to get to that platform? When you actually chant the holy name purely, Ahobata Swapachato Guriyat, it's considered you've already done these things. So faith is sufficient if you have it. But how to get it if you don't hear properly from the guru? And you don't try to understand the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. And what was your other question? Does the guru have to be living? There are advantages, aren't there? With that personal reciprocation. Well, the obviously the essence of Krishna consciousness, you follow the instructions of the guru, not that you see him. You can see someone and offend someone. You can see someone and disobey someone. So the emphasis obviously is to follow him. It's just like the Dham. It's better to be in New York. I'm not Raghunath Das Goswami. It's better to be in New York and fully serving and remembering Krishna than to be living in the Dham and thinking about sex life, or to be thinking about, you know, going back to America. But the Dham is important because it gives so much facility to remember Krishna and perfect one's life, but you have to utilize it. So the form of the spiritual master is also important. Because it'll give you some, that relationship and those instructions and those personal dealings will give you impetus to follow his order and follow his teachings and following his instructions. But that's the essence. Better not to see him and follow the instructions than to be in his association and be offensive. So we all wish that Prabhupada was here, could see what's going on and tell us what is right and what is wrong. That personal association, that personal direction. So obviously it has advantages. There's some people in Prabhupada's personal association that left. And there's some people that hardly met him that have him in their heart. So we can look at it as a wonderful thing, but it's not the essence. Okay, any other questions?
I just have one from the beginning. About counteracting the effects of Kali Yuga. The effects, is it actually something from without, or is it something from within?
No, the effects are there. The Kali Yuga is more in passion and ignorance. And you can see it. Mm-hmm. It's shaped that way more. In other words, matter has an effect on consciousness. and the transformation of matter has an effect on consciousness. Just like, for example, man and woman. For a man, the shape of a woman, why does it say it's in the mode of passion? Because it has that effect on his consciousness. Certain music is in different modes and has the effect on consciousness in different ways. Some music is in the mode of goodness. It means sounds. And it means that there's certain shapes, forms, sounds, transformations of matter that have different effects on consciousness. The shapes, forms, transformation of matter in Kali Yuga, it becomes progressively more and more in ignorance and passion. The sounds of Kali Yuga become more in ignorance. The shape and forms of Kali Yuga become more in ignorance. Everything is in those modes. For example, take a city like New York City. Everything is there to stimulate your senses for passion and ignorance. While the country is, you know, will stimulate you for goodness. And in Satya Yuga, it was mostly rural and hermitages. And if you look in, I'm reading in the Bhagavatam now, when Krishna entered Dwarka, you see what the cities were like. Everything was in the shape of transcendental goodness. There was, you know, lanes and beautiful flowers and ponds and parks, and you know, everything had such a sattvic effect on the consciousness. So Satya Yuga was in sattva. It was in goodness. So we can see what happens. And the people themselves that you have to associate with, they're much more impassioned and ignorant. I once went to a Brahmin's town, a village, a Brahmin's street in India, where all Brahmins were there. It was so incredible. Like, most of the houses were below the ground. You know, you walk down to them, and they were like, even if it was like a city, they were like mud, you know, floors. Mm-hmm. It was spotless. Absolutely spotless. Cleanliness is in the mode of goodness. So Kali Yuga is much more dirty. The people themselves are much more in the modes. So it actually is an external influence on the consciousness in Kali Yuga. And therefore in Kali Yuga you have to preach. Because what preaching does is take the object in the modes and see it as an object for Krishna's service. The preacher is looking at that. He's looking at the people in ignorance and looking at them how to engage them in Krishna's service. So rather the object's impacting his consciousness, he's like proactive. His consciousness comes out in terms of the objects. In other words, he doesn't allow it to affect his consciousness. I saw that myself when I came from India, from Vrindavan. You know, and I was preaching. I was living in New York, but I didn't really feel like I was in New York. You know, I was in my room, I was chanting and hearing, and then I'd go in the car to 26 Second Avenue or someplace. I was in the mood of preaching. So it has that effect. Okay, I think we'll end here. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.